It is awesome to be back. Yep, you just tuned in to Set for Success with your host, me, Richard Lannan. And yeah, we're going to continue that journey to help you create a roadmap to change your business, career, or life. And we're going to do this chatting with one person at a time to uncover people's lives, their business, their journey, their successes, to help you create the success that you deserve. And don't you want to be successful in life, and no matter what you do? It's the Set for Success quote time. Given the right circumstances, from no more than dreams, determination, and the liberty to try, quite ordinary people consistently do extraordinary things. That's from Dean Hawk. I always find that quote extremely fascinating. Anything about performance and actually how people succeed is fascinating to me. I often wonder about performance for organizations, teams, and individuals, like people like you and me. To perform has to have something to do with a connection, a need to do something, to achieve something, to go somewhere. Maybe there's some goal and objectives involved. I had the opportunity the other day just to do some random research. I was hanging out with 30 international professional students in Canada who were trying to build their business skills. And the room was a league of nations, well represented by diversity across our country. So I asked what performance meant to them. The responses were diverse, from supporting an organization to building something from nothing, in other words, achieving a goal and objective, to working till you drop, or to being independently physically active and being in better shape. I don't really think these professionals totally answered the question, but I do think they touched on the essence of performance thinking. So you know what I did? What I usually do, I start about my networks. I went through my network and asked, who do I know who knows about thinking, learning, and building knowledge on performance? And I came across David Brond on LinkedIn, who happened to be an organizational performance consultant. David, it's great to have you on the show, Set for Success.
Well, thank you very much. It's awesome to be here with you.
I'm actually quite excited, and the listeners wouldn't know this, but I'm going to sort of share this. Dave and I just spent 10, 15 minutes together just before we kicked off the show, and we almost forgot to actually do the show.
It's true. I was having so much fun. It's just awesome. We just keep going and going.
And when I say come on and have a coffee with me, I really do mean it.
It's true, yeah.
Yeah. So, David, I always like to start off with a base question, and I think most of my listeners know this. It's always good to make a connection with whoever's tuning in. So Right. Why don't we discover a little bit about David? Like, who are you? Where'd you come from?
Well, so I was born in London, England. And unfortunately, I never came back with the accent. My parents came back too early. Otherwise, you'd think I was really intelligent with that British accent.
Or a little snobby.
One of the two, right? Okay.
I'm sorry to all my people out there with British accents.
My apologies to anyone from my home country or whatever. But no, yeah. Canada is my home. Basically, born and raised in the Winnipeg area. Went to university in Winnipeg for my undergraduate and learned a lot of things. So that's kind of basically it. I'm married, four daughters, a lot of excitement there.
Yeah, and, a lot of four girls.
Keeps me on my toes, man. Yeah, you talk about performance management. I'm being managed girls, on the home end anyway. You know,
it's funny, my wife and I, we don't have four girls. We do have two boys.
Okay.
And my wife has often said there's way too much testosterone in our family. always wished that we had a girl or two, right,
totally.
To balance things out, right? So I can imagine, you know, having all boys, what the opposite would be like to having all girls.
I came from a family of four boys, okay. So now I'm dealing with it on the other side.
So you're being punished.
Well, sometimes I wonder that. What's going on here? The gods that be. What am I paying a price for something?
Yeah, if you're tuned in, you're listening to your dad. We're just joking.
Yeah, okay. We're joking. Exactly.
Exactly. Out of curiosity, how old are your kids?
So I've got 12, 10, 8, and 6.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. All even numbers there.
Very even, yeah. Our wife and I both decide, let's keep it tight.
Yeah.
And so the youngest can relate to the oldest. And,
yeah, that's really smart. You know, there's 12 years between our two.
Wow. And
same person, right? But it was just the...
The way it works, right?
It's just the way the... how do you say it? It's the hand-life deltas.
Yes, I get it. Totally get it.
You know?
Yeah.
So, but there's a whole other story here, but this is not about me. You have sort of an interesting background because I think you're a son of a pastor or something, right?
That's right. You know, when you look at how I got into consulting, I thought about this. You know, I started right out of high school getting into business and started a water company, started a couple other companies, sold it, you know, kind of jumped into different things, kind of the entrepreneurial itch. And eventually went on, got my BA in conflict resolution and psychology, and eventually went to serve in a church with my father, who was in ministry too. Our family is kind of had the ministry bug. You had the entrepreneurial bug in your
family. Yeah, I grew up in... you read up on me a little bit. You know what? I was born right into it. That's what my parents were all about. That's what all my uncles and aunts were all about. But, you know, if you think about it, I'm old enough so that I can say that was part of their generation.
Right.
You had to create something out of nothing because you weren't always guaranteed that there'd be work there for you.
Totally.
And I think that was part of the aspect
push.
Of that. Yeah. But anyway, go ahead.
So with my own background, I wanted to make a difference in the world, but looked at different options and had that entrepreneurial bug. And so kind of was going back and forth and had the William Wilberforce kind of moment. I don't know if you know William Wilberforce was kind of the guy that that got into the as an MP in the British Parliament in 1780s, 90s, and he wasn't sure, should I be a pastor, should I be, you know, in Parliament,
a politician.
And you know, now that wasn't
that's sort of like diverse,
but in the end he jumped into going for making a difference and helped after 25 years to, you know, introduce anti-slavery into the British Empire. And so for me, I kind of read up on him around this time in my life and realized, you know what, I have a desire to see people, employees, employers, founders of companies, chairs of boards, whatever, make a difference and see their employees flourish and bring out the best in their performance. And I can make a difference in that realm. And so that's what I chose, and I've never looked back. It's
never looked back.
Enjoyable.
How many years have you been involved in that now?
So directly about 6 or 7, and indirectly about close to 15. So even when I was doing different things, I was, you know, flying across the world, you know, involved with nonprofit international organizations, dealing with conflict, and even closer to home. So
when you said you're traveling around the world and stuff, was that more, I'm just curious, was that more missionary style work, or was it?
I was dealing with big mission boards, you know, one that comes to mind, you know, dealing with conflict in Asia. They had 300 bases on every, you know, around the world, something on every continent. So when something breaks down, you know, they're kind of like, wow, we need some help here. So
it's pretty significant.
Yeah.
Your work today, is it still, is it more localized now, or is it more still a lot more international type stuff?
Yeah, mostly I would say about 80% is local Winnipeg area, and about 20%, you know, sometimes I'll do something in the U.S. I was in L.A. for, you know, a couple of weeks last year. Most of the time now it's in the Winnipeg area or across Canada.
Yeah, it's interesting you would say that. I've gone through sort of a very similar cycle as yourself, where I've worked in Europe, I've worked in the United States, and then slowly it became sort of Western Canada. Now it's more like the prairie regions, a little bit less time.
Well,
you know, well, because if you got to do something, for example, from Winnipeg and the Saskatoon, it's only an hour flight. It's a long ride. You just get to the airport, you get on a plane, come home that night, right? And very different. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to start talking about performance management, what it means, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about some of the blind spots with organizations. This is Richard Lanfer, Set for Success, and you know what? We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. And yeah, you know who this is. This is Richard Lanfer, Set for Success, and I'm hanging out with David Braun. We're talking a bit about, well, performance management. I don't think we totally kicked in there yet. We're just talking a bit about his background. But just before the break, you know, you made a very interesting statement, or maybe I did, I don't know. But we sort of talked a little bit about business blind spots or organization blind spots when it comes to performance, performance management. Maybe you could speak to that a little bit. What is that?
You know? Right. Well, you know how it is. Your first fender bender when you're 16 or 17 years old, you think, well, I understand. I see my blind spots. And then you get that first hit and it's like, I didn't see them. Where were they? I thought I understood. And that's kind of sometimes the way it is with anyone who's managing a team, you know, leading your own company. It could be a group of 10 people or a larger, you know, company of, you know, mid-size, 200, whatever. Is sometimes we get comfortable, we see the lay of the land, and we think, you know what, I think I know where things are at. And that's sometimes, that place of complacency is sometimes our most dangerous place. And so a lot of times when I get called in, it's post blind spots where I'm dealing with someone and they're like, man, I thought I understood my team, and then this person just went up and left, and now I'm trying to put the pieces back together.
Well, it could even be a little bit worse than that. I mean, I've run some teams. I think the worst I had, and this is a long time ago now, but I had two people who actually got into a fight.
Wow.
You know? And now I had a fairly big team, so I mean, I'm not with them all the time.
Totally,
right?
Yeah.
But, you know, from what we gathered, it came out of nowhere. And it was over an issue that, you know, we didn't really know about. And it actually turned out to be a personal life issue that they weren't sharing with anybody.
Yes.
But something happened and they, you know, the under the surface conflict that snapped. I mean that sort of nicely, right?
Oh, that's good.
And then, you know, and then, yeah. So, I mean, is that the kind of stuff you're talking
honestly,
about?
That's a perfect example.
Oh,
Richard.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
Because one of the things that, one of the tips I give managers and just people in general, and this works even in your personal life, is the five whys. Have you ever heard of that, right?
Why did this, you ask why five times.
Keep tracking back, right?
You know, the interesting thing about that is I always say to people, we'll explain the five whys, but I always say, you know, if you're a family person, if you have kids,
right?
What age did your kids ask you the most questions that drove you nuts? And they usually say five.
Five or six, yeah.
And so then it's like, okay, then why did they, you know, what did they ask? Why is the sky blue? You know, because it's blue.
Yeah.
Well, why, you know, doesn't, and, but they will not accept, until you say something that's acceptable to them, a response, they'll keep asking you why.
That's so true.
You know,
yeah.
So that's my hint to people. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
No, and as you know, when you go back and you start doing the root cause thing, you start to realize, you know, you get down to the basics. A lot of times we ask the first question and then we kind of go, okay, you know, I think I understand it. That's the first why. But really, it just gives you the first level. It's like the iceberg. The further you go down, the more you get closer to that root cause.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're dealing with performance management, you really need to be asking those why questions. And that's really a lot of times where the wheels fall off.
And that's actually a really good tool to recommend to people to use. Now you pose another interesting question because we sort of jumped into blind spots and performance management. But you know what? Let's step back a little bit for a second here and get to some foundational stuff. What the heck is performance management?
Totally. You know, it's an intimidating topic for whether you've been a CEO for 25 years or you just are starting to manage a team and you're 5 years in your career. But it's the type of thing where we have inherited, performance management is really just about accountability. But what we've inherited is industrial revolution type model of performance management, where it's all about, you know, competency, accountability. But there's a second part that we miss. It's really the other side of the coin, and that is the engagement and the human development. And a lot of times when, you know, dealing with clients, the employer will come and ask me for a new form or a new format or a new way or a new policy. And a lot of times they just want a form put together, but we're missing the human element, which really is the most, that's the foundational piece that gets missed a lot of times.
Okay. And so when you talk about the human element, can you give us some examples of what that might be?
You know, it's the type of thing where, you know, when you're passing through the workshop or you're in, you know, in the boardroom, you're checking in with people around you and you're saying, hey, John, remember we talked 4 weeks ago about you're going to work on that thing? How's it going with that?
Yeah.
That's performance management. But a lot of times for busy managers, it's that annual review where for us as employers, that's important. We want to get our competency numbers. We want to understand where things are going. But for the employee, they just care about that regular contact, that support, that ongoing feedback. So it's that day-to-day thing.
Well, yeah, you know, and I think that's a really good point. I years ago, I ran a bunch of teams, as I mentioned, right?
Right.
And I was talking to an HR manager one time, and I said to them, you know, I know more about my employees' personal lives than sometimes I think I should know.
Wow, that's awesome.
She said back to me that means they trust you. And that always sort of stuck with me, right?
It's
like, you know, and I mean, I knew things about their parents. I knew things about their personal lives, about whether their marriage was good or they were going through divorce or what was happening to their kids and everything. And I often thought to myself, you know, I sometimes thought to myself, I really don't need to know all this stuff.
Right.
Or I know too much. Right?
Totally, yeah.
But it's all that stuff that I knew that I could never share with anybody else. You know, in other words, I could not say, if I had a conversation with Sam and about stuff that's going on in his life, and then Nancy, I'm just picking names, had a conversation about stuff. And there were different employees. I'm not saying they're connected.
Yeah.
But I could never share one life with another. Right?
That's
it was
wise.
Sort of that sort of, you know, how does that factor into performance management?
Yeah. You know what? When you're dealing with a team, it's fantastic. The example you gave of knowing, what I call it, we help, you know, build a profile for your employees. Know the, hey, what's your favorite magazine? What are your hobbies, right? Why? Because on the other side of that, when you have time, when they've, you know, superseded expectations, they've put in 3 weeks worth of overtime, you can say, hey, buddy, I really appreciate that. And by the way, I just you know, submitted a subscription to National Geographic because you know that's what they like. Kind of input into them is powerful, worth way more than, you know, even a $500 or a $600 or a $1,000 bonus.
It's interesting you would say that because, and I don't know if I have time for this story, so I'm giving just as much examples as you.
Yeah, go for it.
So I was going to talk about a performance management challenge I had years ago. This is 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
With an employee who literally within 12 months by focusing more on their personal needs, turned around and got a promotion. So we're going to take a short break and we're going to come back to talking about how we might actually affect people's performance and really to the point where they'll move ahead. This is Richard Lamford, Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hey, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with David Braun, and we've been talking a bit about performance management. I really loved what you talked about defining performance management and really working with people, especially when we talked about, I guess it was the Industrial Revolution,
right,
or the Industrial Age, and the approaches to actually what needs to happen now. I sort of got the impression you were talking about humanizing the approach to working with people.
Yeah, you got it there. We're not dealing with robots. I mean, sure, we have a lot of robotics, but I think you had an example that you were just on the tip of your tongue.
I always try to be careful how much do I put in place, David, and versus my guests, right? But you're bringing it out in me. I guess years ago, I had an employee who was really struggling with their performance. And it was to the point, actually, where in talking to human resources, because I always do things as a team.
Nice.
We were talking about, you know, potentially letting the person go. It wasn't until I had a very personal conversation with them that I discovered what was going on in their personal life. And I also discovered that one of the key motivators for them in their personal life was travel, right?
Wow.
They didn't work to live. They didn't live to work. They worked to live. Sorry, I always got to try to get those. There's a difference.
There is a big difference.
And so they really worked to do traveling and stuff, right? And so doing that more personal thing. So at that point in time, I used to run a fairly large Canadian region, like a very significant geographic spread.
Right.
And I had regional offices in different places that we'd have all sorts of projects to do. So what I discovered was if I sent them to Saskatoon or Edmonton or out to Vancouver for a couple of days, they were happy, you know, they got to go away somewhere and work.
Nice.
And so I just sort of made them part of a project team that sort of moved around a bit and helped other areas implement systems and stuff like this.
Wow.
Lo and behold, their whole performance turned around.
Wow. Yeah. I love the piece in your story, and I think it really highlights that it's about understanding as managers, as parents, whatever we're really managing performance of in our lives, understanding the human. What's the human element? That's the underlying thing, you know? Yeah,
and then to the best of our ability. This is what's a lesson learned for me, because I come from probably you get this a lot in leaders, and maybe somebody listening gets this too. Mm-hmm. You've been successful in your career, mm-hmm. you're a technical professional, mm-hmm. then suddenly somebody puts you in charge of people, and you don't have the skills. I mean, that's where you start, right?
Yeah, that's
a good
point.
Then you need to learn the sort of, you know, not everybody's a natural manager or leader. You have to learn those skills.
Well, you know, that's where it's all about, you know, growing your leaders for engagement. And so, you know, what are some of those principles? And really when talking to leaders, they go, oh, man, I don't know if I have time or, you know, I'm busy. How do I have time to, you know, encourage all my employees? And so really it's about dealing with habits. I mean, when I turn the turn signal, it comes out of me and I don't have to think about it when I'm driving my car. So working on developing habits versus trying to develop duties. Duties, you always have to remind yourself, you have to pull yourself to it. And so that's really what we want to work towards. How do we develop habits, you know? And it can be as simple as putting thank you cards in your top of your drawer in your desk, having a bulletin board, you know, with appreciation notes from clients or customers that you put up, but being intentional and creating systems that allow for that.
I worked with it's interesting to talk about habits because that was, you know, you have to develop habits, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I worked with this woman years ago. She was an awesome team leader.
Wow.
And when she joined the group, the team, right? The leadership team.
Yeah.
She would do things like circle appreciation in our team meetings where each employee would say things like, you know, I worked with Sally or Divij or whatever it is, and this last week, and they did this, and I thought it was really wonderful that they did it. At first, you know, at first I thought it was a little silly.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I mean, I'm a little old school sometimes, but you know what? Lo and behold, I started watching what was going on. I decided to implement it myself. And I'm starting to wonder who's interviewing who.
Yeah, this is good.
But I started to implement it myself. At first, my team thought I was nuts, right? I actually got pushback.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing was that they started to understand one another.
Wow.
And they started to understand that, oh my gosh, you know,
yeah.
just because I don't like the fact that, you know, somebody brings such and such a food to work or whatever,
yeah.
you know, there's a bigger thing here because they just did this, what made me look good.
Oh, yeah.
And I could appreciate what they did. It was pretty amazing.
Well, I've had pushback like that too. That's a great example. And it's kind of part of the 20, 30, 50 rule. And what is that you're saying?
Yeah, you can see it on my face.
Yeah.
Why don't I read your face, Richard? What's my next question? What's the 20, 30, 50 rule?
Well, they find constantly when you go into big or small companies, businesses, you know, homemade business, whatever, that 20% of what employees are looking for is kind of the big company appreciation. The 30% is from colleagues and coworkers, like your friend would do in the boardroom. And 50% is the managers. So, you know, as leaders, if we're not practicing and modeling appreciation and, you know, checking in and giving feedback, both constructive and positive, then what happens is our employees start to drift.
Yeah.
And employees leave companies not because of bad companies all the time. A lot of times it's because of just poor managers.
Poor
I don't
managers.
Want to say bad managers, but poor managers.
Yeah, because I can see there could be a distinction between poor manager versus bad manager, right?
Definitely.
So I can get that. Interesting you would say that. I was reading an article on LinkedIn that talked about a recent survey in Canada,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's at 78%. So 78% of employees leave their work environment not because of the company, but because of their manager.
Oh, man.
And that's a fairly high statistic.
Can I throw you another one?
Yeah, shoot.
Gallup, you know, Gallup's a big one.
They did a
poll of 4 million people. They've been doing this, 4 million employees year after year. Consistently, they get around 65-66% of employees say they haven't had any appreciation or positive feedback in a 12-month period from their managers.
That's pretty amazing.
Oh, right? 4 million employees.
4 million employees. Now, was that one Canadian-wide?
That was the U.S.,
That's U.S. Yeah. Because one of the other fascinating things I find, we're going to throw some numbers out here.
Right on.
Canada, the backbone of Canadian society economically is small business.
Wow.
Right?
So
now small business in Canada is defined as 500 employees or less. Some books define it as 250 employees or less.
Okay.
So for some people, they'd say that that's big business, but really in the scheme of things, that's small business. So under that definition, 99%, I think, of Canadian business is based on small business. And the majority of them are only less than a dozen people or less.
Wow.
That's quite significant. So if you think about 80% of people leaving the workplace, I mean, it's within that small business environment where they're not actually happy.
Yeah.
It's not the big corporations.
No,
and even though they have issues there, I mean, no doubt there's challenges. But it's in the small business environment that's maybe not taking care of their people the way they need to.
And as you know, the cost of rebuilding that employee, you know, that replacing that employee is huge. And so, you know, I think the numbers are 4.5 years on average an employee will stay with an employer.
Yeah, and which is another interesting stat. And we're getting into stats.
Right on,
because, recently I was doing some work with a group of people, international again, and we were talking about the difference between baby boomers and millennials.
Generation, right? Right.
And I'm a Gen Xer.
Right.
So, and 8% of the population is Gen Xers. And we're the ones that are ignored. We're the ones with attitude.
Yeah.
And
it's
then
true.
You've got 55% of the population in Canada are baby boomers and echo generation. And you look at the distinction between them, I mean, they're so far apart in the sense of workplace loyalty.
It's so true.
Right?
It's so true.
The boomers stayed.
Yeah.
Gen Y echoes. They won't put up with garbage.
Nope. They're going to go faster than you can blink.
Then you can blink. That's the way to actually put it, actually. So, I mean, all of these things sort of factor into, I would think, an organization's performance.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
In what way?
Well, I mean, when you're pulling all the pieces together, you know, you've got different mindsets and different expectations that each generation is bringing to the table. And when you bring that into the performance management arena, yeah. you know, it's ultimately even the expectation of how relationship is done in the workplace is different. You got your, you know, your Echo and your Wise, they're expecting to come to the table right away and to be invited in and have an equal voice. Some of your older generation, they've had to slug it out to get to that table. So it's not,
hey, dudes.
Yeah, that's a little bit of entitlement. Back off, you know? Yeah, yeah, so right there, you've got some tension going on.
You know what we need to do? I think when we can come back, we could talk about organizational tension. Probably wouldn't be a bad idea. But we need to take a short break first. So Set for Success, Richard Landon, we'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I am hanging out with David Braun. Boy, David, your name is getting used a lot today. Eh? It's an easy name, actually.
Thank you.
Just before break, we were talking about organizational tension. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the whole lead into that, to be honest with you. Sometimes I go blank during the breaks. Could you maybe talk a little bit more about organizational tension?
Well, when you're talking about performance management, for any of us, most of us, that conjures up a little bit of tension, you know, that annual review, oh no, what's going to happen?
I hate annual reviews.
Right.
But yet I help clients sometimes develop them.
Right. So you totally understand that. And that's employees feel that, managers feel that, they're in the squeeze, right? So that's part of that tension. And really, there's a few pitfalls that come up that can lead and increase that tension. And one of those pitfalls when we're dealing with it, with performance management, is we're focusing on effort over outcomes.
So what do you mean by effort over outcomes?
Well, managers can say, hey, good job, you're working really hard, but they're not getting the outcomes. They're not looking at what's the actual achievable results that we're trying to do. So, you know, term after term, year after year, they're praising this poor employee, but never coaching them towards growth. And then, of course, your high performers are resenting that person who keeps getting praised for effort, but isn't producing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that creates a little bit of tension. And of course, managers, you know, sometimes are afraid of negative feedback.
Well, sometimes, you know, I wonder if it's the conflict, right? I mean, it's that sort of situation where, you know, if I sit down with them and I have to deal with this issue, now I've got a conflict that's being created and I really don't want to be in conflict with anybody.
That's so true. Yeah, because you got to work with them. You see them every day. It's like, oh, man.
And sometimes they become almost like your friend. Right? I mean, you can still have work friend, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, I know what
you still
mean.
Have professionalism and everything involved, but you get to know them a bit, right? And it's just like, do I don't want to use the word criticism, but do I critique them or something on this particular behavior or action or activity that they're involved in?
I mean, and that's where when we see the conversation as an opportunity to push this person forward for development, for growing as a person. I mean, it's a mindset shift, right?
Yeah.
But that kind of leads into the other aspect of a pitfall for performance management, and that's follow-up.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times when we just rely on the annual review as the performance management system, we miss out on the, you know, the week-to-week, the month-to-month. Some of the clients I coach, I just say, hey, mark it on your calendar. Every month, you're going to have a 10-minute conversation on one or two items.
Yeah.
That way, at the end of the year, there's no surprises. It's not like, well, you never told me that I was not working out on this, you know, this goal.
I had a boss that had us all write car stories on a monthly basis.
What?
Yeah, I know. Now I'm giving you a little bit tool. So car stories, challenge, action, results.
Okay.
And we were allowed to write them with three sentences. So what was the challenge that we had? What actions did we take? What results did we create?
Excellent.
And the interesting thing is they just asked us to write three or four every month. Right. And it didn't take that long if you kept notes or anything, or you just did it weekly or whatever. Just three, end of the week, three quick sentences, you know, some challenge you had that week, some action you took, and what result you got. By the end of the year, you've already pre-written your performance review.
Brilliant.
And you had a list of things that you could actually draw from. So I actually implemented with a team. Sorry, I have to share stories.
No,
you're getting stories from me. I implemented with a team, and at first they thought I was nuts, right? Again, you get that resistance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you know what? At the end of the year, and they had to do the formal 360 and stuff, they literally just populated it with these stories, cleaned it up a bit, right?
Yeah.
And then they came back to me afterwards during the debriefs and said, you know, that was really great because when I had to sit down and write this thing, it was already written, you know? And so,
I mean, one of my mentors that I worked with, he worked in the hospitality industry. He actually had to fire over 750 employees.
Yeah, that's hard.
You know, and it's hard. And he said only four of them stormed out of his office swearing.
Yeah.
Which means that he said, I carried out the follow through month to month so that when we had that hard conversation, they weren't going, oh, I didn't see this coming. They were like, man, you gave me all the tools, you supported me all the way, you spoke up, you encouraged me, but I haven't made the choices to change.
Yeah.
And so I know I've got to walk out the door. I got to take responsibility.
That's really hard.
That's
really hard. I've been part of that merger acquisition and attrition structure, both on both ends. So I understand it. Somebody wants to get in touch with you. How would they go about doing it, David?
Okay. So yeah, very simple. I'm in the Winnipeg area. Just look on LinkedIn, David Braun, and you'll find me there. You can look at my website, excelworkplaceservices.com, and that will give you information on email and, you know, calling me. You can call me at, just call my cell phone, 204-380-9621.
Awesome. All right. It's Set for Success hot seat time, and David's on it. He's sitting here right now, David. So it's always interesting. I like to try to come up with unique questions, and I think I'm actually going to throw one at you that we talked about at the break, so you're a little bit on this one. If you were a fruit, an apple, what kind of apple would you be and why?
I think I'd want to be the red apple.
And why the red apple?
It's soft, juicy. You know, the green ones, the galas, they can be a little bit harder to chew on.
Yeah.
Soft, you sink in, you can enjoy the flavor. They're easy to grind up, so you really get the flavor right away. You don't have to kind of work your way through.
So does that say something about yourself personally?
You know,
what does that say about you?
Yeah, you know, when I'm working with people, and even just in my personal relationships, I like to be real, share who I am, you know, incorporate my family life. You get to know me.
Yeah, I think that's really good. What is something that you want to protect in your life?
Well, I think I'll go with a kind of a clichéic answer here, but family is absolutely number one for me. Yeah. You know, we have family night once a week. We love, it's a tradition, and our girls scream and shout when Friday night comes around. That's huge. As I get older, they're the ones that are going to choose the personal home I'm going to live in. So, you know, I got to be careful.
You got to keep good. It's interesting you would actually say this because we were talking at the beginning of the show about kids, right? And mine are older. My oldest is 30. My youngest is 18.
Right.
Quite proud of where he's going in his life right now. But one of the things that we implemented as a family was dinner together as a family every evening because we live busy lives.
That's
right?
Great.
No TV on, nothing like this, right? So he was at a friend's house a week ago, and he was invited for dinner. Mm-hmm. And they sat down in front of the TV to have dinner as a family with, remember, TV trays, right?
Yeah.
And he came home. He's 18 years of age. He goes, people do this?
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, this is weird, right?
That's great.
And again, it was like that communication thing. Sorry, I just needed to share this. If you could eliminate something in your life, what would be something you'd like to eliminate?
Distractions.
What kind of distractions?
Well, you know, I'm a Gen Xer, so I've just come into this whole social media thing as an adult, you know. I mean, I was in Nintendo in my teenage years, so I've had to learn new skills of turning off things, not opening up, you know, RSS feeds on news. I love news, but I gotta find a category and a time and limit it in that category, not let it spread into other areas.
It's interesting that you would actually say that because people now take, what do they call it, a technology break? So I've worked with a lot of companies that are now doing this in the senior management ranks and stuff, where it's just like, okay, for these 3 days, all my technology is going to be turned off. I'm not going to be connected.
Wow.
And they actually announce it to their teams and everything. Isn't that amazing?
That's great.
It is great, but it's I think it's a big statement about what it says as a culture where we've come with technology. I always find people's careers very interesting. Okay, but if you could not do what you're doing now in your organization performance space, what is your secret thing that you would love to have done that you've never done?
Oh man, these are good questions. I think speaking to the youth and college market.
Okay. So something about more focused on that market.
The next generation, encouraging them to be all they can be. We live in an incredible time in history, tons of opportunity. And for them to know, I mean, sometimes you don't even realize till you're past that age of, you know, diving into some, and for them to be empowered to know you can change the world. I mean, there's so many tools at your fingertips. You just got to dream, believe in yourself, you know.
Awesome. Dave, what a show we've been having. I usually try to ask a sort of former last question. I'm going to apologize to you. I'm sort of going to have to skip that right now, but I suspect that I know what your response is. It's probably something about serving people. You know what? You've been listening to Set for Success with Richard Lannan. And David, I want to thank you for sort of hanging out with me on the show today.
Thank you very much.
It's been just awesome. Also, listeners, you know, I love it when you tune in. I want to thank you for tuning in. And I do want you to think about the show. So if you have a thought, a question, an idea for a show, send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And do remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.